Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of One Day Fantasy Sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, good to have you here. We've got a little set today.
Look at us, nice, right?
Moving on up in the world. We are going to, of course, talk about Week 12 in the NFL. Past Thanksgiving now, it feels like this is the stretch run, isn't it? The bit where you really get kind of serious.
Yeah, when you talk to your football team, you divide the season either into, some coaches do fourths, most do thirds. Mm. You know, your 16 games and the first part of the season, you really, because of the way training camps are now anymore, Neil, you're really just finding out who you are.
Right.
Right? And then the middle part is the grind. Mm. Then we're into what we are now, which is after Thanksgiving, it's the sprint now. Now you're playing for the playoffs, you're playing for seeding. Most teams are, I guess, three got eliminated this past weekend.
We are going to make our picks for Week 13 in the NFL. Well, let's get to a little bit of news first, and we'll start with, this is no surprise, after the Raiders beat the Denver Broncos 21-14, Michael Crabtree and Aqib Talib both suspended for two games, Jeff. It was quite the punch up without actually ever really landing many punches. Some of these guys need to go to, I know they do a lot of the mixed martial arts training, but they want to learn how to land a few.
You know what? It's funny you say it, because I thought they both should have been fined for bad boxing technique. And I talked to my man, Vinny Pazienza, and I said, Vinny, you got to get a hold of Mike Crabtree, because he drops his hands, he's going to get knocked out.
Yeah, he took his helmet off. Somebody
asked me about the fight, and I said I gave Talib points for keeping his helmet on during the fight. Crabtree looked like Muhammad Ali dropping his hands, but no Ali shuffle.
It was frustrating for the coaches there, though, because you lose two good players. And that's when you talk about selfish penalties, because there was clearly bad blood between these two. There is bad blood. There has been bad blood. Last year, Talib rips off the gold chain. He gets the gold chain again. Credit to Talib, because by all accounts, Crabtree had taped it down, and he still got it off him.
You know what? And it makes you wonder, like, what is the focus here?
But yeah, you're putting yourself ahead of the team. It's like, well, I'm going to get him.
Yeah, yeah. It was personal agenda.
I don't care if I get penalized for it.
No, and you know what? It's I think, an indication of the frustration of both these teams are feeling. You look at both the Raiders and the Broncos going into the season. Certainly, you think that the Broncos, with the defense that they have a chance to be a Super Bowl contender. And then everybody was pointing at the Raiders as a potential contender because Carr was going to be healthy again. They'd had such a great year last year and were rolling until he got hurt. So it's been a disappointing year in both places, and I think that manifests itself in the frustration that those guys felt and that came out in the fight.
Broncos have lost seven straight for the first time in 50 years. So back to 1967, I think that was when they were burning the old socks. Remember, they didn't like those old stripy socks in Denver? It's that long ago. So they're on a historic slide in Denver. They can't find a quarterback. Paxton Lynch gets hurt again. First round draft pick at quarterback who gets hurt again, and now he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks with an ankle injury. It's not looking good for Vance Joseph, is it, Jeff? Because all these kind of things, they pile on top of each other, one after the other. And John Elway is sitting there, I'm not going to say in an ivory tower, but in a tower where he has won Super Bowls as a player and as a general manager. And even he seems to be throwing indirect or...
Those were direct.
Yeah, they weren't even indirect, were they? Let's be obvious. They were direct jibes at the team, calling a team soft. It's probably no coincidence that they're having a scrap in training, in practice leading up to that Raiders game. Chris Harris Jr. got into a fight in practice. Then you get that fight on Sunday. It's just a bad, bad... When it unravels in the NFL, for some teams it can unravel fast and in a big way.
Yeah, and you're right. When you're in pro football and you're under such a microscope, and there's so much pressure on you, and there's so much media focus and attention and the talk shows, and everything is sliced and diced and dissected a million different ways. Mm. When it starts to unravel, it's going to unravel fast. And when you're a young coach like Vance is, and I love him. He's a guy, that kid that played for me, but I was worried about this very situation when he took the job. Mm. And he's got to take the job, because you don't know if you're ever going to get another opportunity. There's only 32 jobs.
Tell us about what his strengths are, Jeff, and why he got this job? Because some people now, if you look at what's being said in the media, and the Denver media are going after him
they're
quite
terrible,
hard, right?
Yeah.
They're suggesting, well, this was a coach who oversaw a team that was a defense that was ranked 29th in the NFL last year in the Miami Dolphins. So they're casting those aspersions. But we know that head coaching job is more than just the X's and O's. Why did he get that job? What are his strengths?
Well, I think the biggest thing that he can do well is he's a good communicator.
Right.
You know, he's a guy who does understand people. He's good with the media. And, you know, to be honest with you, and again, he's one of my guys, mm. but you wonder when a guy takes a jump like that, if he's ready for all that it entails. And then, additionally, where he had a chance to keep a guy like Wade, who could have helped him through this, he went out and hired Joe Woods as his defensive coordinator. Now, that doesn't mean Joe Woods is a bad coach. I'm just saying that Joe Woods has no head coaching experience.
Yeah.
He doesn't have – so
that's where
what
some of this
Sean
is on,
McVay gets yeah. the benefit of Wade's.
Right. But some of that is on Elway then, isn't it? Because John Elway has been critical of his players and I guess he's putting pressure on his coaches. But John Elway liked Joe Woods. They liked Joe Woods in that building, and that's why they promoted him. But they let go one of the all-time great defensive coordinators who, what, four different stops as a head coach, you know,
yeah.
has seen it all, could have been the best sounding board for Joseph, and he's not been able to have that and lean on that. So I think John Elway has to take some blame here, whether it goes to the makeup of the coaches. Quarterback situation hasn't been answered, has it?
Well, I'm sure what John thought was that, you know, if you bring Mike McCoy back as the offensive coordinator, there's a guy that's got head coaching experience, albeit 5 years in San Diego as compared to 35 that Wade has. But that didn't work out either because he ends up getting fired 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So you've changed quarterbacks, you've changed offensive coordinators. The fact of the matter is the next change that's coming is probably going to be Vance's job.
Well, we've seen one and done before. It's
yep.
not like it doesn't happen. It seems like there's no five-year plan in the NFL anymore, is there?
No, and you know what? The thing that was more alarming to me than really what Elway said was the messages you started to hear out of that football team about maybe even as long ago as a month when Derek Wolfe said, "We stink." And we're not a good football team, and we've gone from being a Super Bowl team to being a laughing stock, I think is how he said it. You know, that's really alarming because there's a guy that's one of your good guys.
Right.
And, you know, he's speaking out publicly because of the frustration he felt. And I'm sure they all feel frustration like that because you look at that football team, especially on the defensive side of it, Neil, there's not a lot that they've lost since their Super Bowl.
Well, they added DeMarta Pico, and he was really good as a run stuffer earlier in the year. You got two Pro Bowl wide receivers. You got problems on the offensive line. Maybe there's a big part of it right there. You always see the teams that do well in this league are doing well on the offensive line, and Denver struggled there.
Yeah, you know, they brought in Menelik. He got hurt, and, you know, they got a young kid learning to play at left tackle. But, you know, you just look at that football team and you feel like a guy like Simeon, who is, God, I hate this term, game manager, you know, but, you know, you got to think he's good enough with that defense, if you play sound in the kicking game, that you're going to be okay. But it just has not worked at all for him.
No, Denver Broncos are 3-8 on the season now. They've lost seven straight. They were 2-0 at the start of the year. The Chiefs were 2-0, the Raiders were 2-0, and the Broncos were 2-0 in that AFC West, and the Chargers.
Watch out now.
0-2, yeah, that Chargers team.
Watch out now. Yeah. You know, and you watch those Chargers, like, you know, we had them in the game the other night. And, Neil, I'm going to tell you something. There is something about Phillip Rivers.
Yeah.
You know, he just has that it thing, you know.
Yeah, that's why his jersey's behind you, you know. I think we're clearly pumping up Phillip Rivers today. The AFC looks like a two-horse race at the moment. The Pittsburgh Steelers are top of the pile at 9-2. The Patriots are 9-2. Both are 6-1 in the conference. They're going to meet in week 15. And Mike Tomlin took a little bit of heat for this, Jeff, on Sunday night. And I think it's a little bit unfair. But Mike Tomlin said there are going to be fireworks in Week 15. And then he said, but that's probably going to be one of two games between us two teams. And if everything goes as planned, Game 1 is going to determine where Game 2 is played. And he got a little bit of criticism for looking ahead to the Patriots and maybe looking ahead to them again in the championship game. And he said, I'm going to address the elephant in the room that is the Patriots. He knows it's a big game coming up. I just think it's a confident coach. Is that, or is that bad that he's looking past? Belichick wouldn't do it.
A contrast in styles, yeah, isn't it? Because Belichick is going to talk about, we're on to whomever they're playing this weekend. Right. And that's all he's going to focus on and talk about. Mm. But in reality, sure they know. And you know that the guys in New England know. Mm. And, now they're not going to dress it that way with their football team, or certainly not publicly. Mm. But, Mike's got a different way of doing it. Now, here's my take on that AFC race. I think you gotta be a little bit cautious if you're the Steelers, because let me just say that was Brett Huntley the other night.
You needed a late field goal to win, and that's
the Packers that were struggling, and they came in and they pushed you for all your worth at your place. Now, we already know that the Patriots have gotten so much better over the course of the season, but they're not a team without warts either.
But where is the challenge then, Jeff? Look at, I mean, Tennessee.
Well, I agree with your comment.
Kansas City.
I agree with your
comment. Jacksonville stubbed their toe in Arizona. Buffalo. I mean,
you got two horses and a bunch of donkeys in the race. That's basically what it looks like.
Jeff, I'm looking down at these AFC playoff seedings, and Buffalo are currently in sixth place at 6-5, but Baltimore are 6-5 as well. Could you imagine if Buffalo miss out by a game?
I knew exactly what you... Nathan Peterman.
Oh, my goodness.
The ghost of Nathan Peterman.
That would be an absolute shocker. But, I mean, Chargers are buried in there at the ninth seed, but they're the ones that jump out to me with the same as you.
Yeah, they're the ones that are playing better, and you look at their football. Now, again, are they good enough? We'll see, but I tell you what, they went into Dallas, which is a tough place to play on a short week on the road. And again, think about this, Neil. You play on Sunday in the league. The players have to have a day off. That's mandated by the Players Association. So they get a day off, and then you got Tuesday, right? You're practicing. Wednesday, you're traveling. Thursday, you're playing a game.
Yeah.
So that's a really short week when you're on the road, right? So for them to go in and play as well as they did against Dallas in that stadium on Thanksgiving, I think was really an indication of where that team's at. And a great job by Anthony Lynn keeping his team focused.
Good job by Gus Bradley as well.
It helps
when you've got Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, but that is a defense that's playing its part in – I almost said San Diego. I almost did it again, Jeff. That's normally your trick to say that, in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and you know what? You look at them, and those two edge rushers have given them, obviously, a huge, huge boost defensively. But, you got Leggett inside. You got some guys. Mebane is a big, strong guy inside. So, they're much, much better than the Charger defense that we've been used to watching for the last 3 or 4 years. And credit to Gus, and I'm happy for him. Interesting watching him schematically, Neil. He's really expanded his repertoire in the things that they're doing, particularly in coverage, because when they're in Seattle, they were basically a single high 3-1 team, and now they're starting to, do some interesting stuff. So I'm happy for Gus.
Just as we touch on the Patriots near the top of the AFC, Jeff, when we look at the Patriots, it's been quite a few years now where they have that early wobble, or it's almost like we're looking for it, and some people are praying for it and hoping for it because they want to see something different. I personally respect the fact that they're such a historically great team. I think we're witnessing NFL history as it's unfolding here with this period of domination with Belichick and Brady. But how do they fix things in season? Is Belichick just better the more he can study opponents? So the more those game tapes stack up on top of each other, the more there is for him to watch? Or is it because he's just coaching up his own team? Or is it probably both?
Well, I think it's a combination of three things, really. I think it's, like you said, the more tape he gets to look at, the more he can hone in on what you do and what your weaknesses are and how to exploit those. The second thing that they do an unbelievably good job with is self-scout. He looks really hard at himself, too, and where their weaknesses are, where their tendencies lay, and coaches against those things. And then the third thing that they do probably a better job than maybe anybody in the league is they coach fundamentals. They work hard. And, you know, remember when we've seen them at Super Bowl practices. Right. Their Super Bowl practices are intense, and they're out there working fundamentals just like it was the first day of training camp. So when you combine those three things, then I think you get that kind of improvement as we see out of them every year.
Let's flip over to the NFC. Philadelphia are top of the pile at 10-1. We got a good look at them all over the Chicago Bears. That was one-sided football. Just Bears were outmatched, Jeff, but what do you make of the Eagles? Because I don't think they're exactly like the New England Patriots, but a way they are like the New England Patriots is that you can pick 7 or 8 players that are going to get their hands on the football and play a role for this team. And it seems to be that way every week. They're not on pace to have a 1,000-yard rusher. They're not going to have a 1,000-yard receiver. But they're 10-1, and they're getting the job done.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting contrast, because when you look at the Patriots, like we did the first drive, and I was going to say something about this in the broadcast, but that first drive where they score, Ebner runs a fake punt. Mm-hmm. Then you get Cooks catches a ball, and you got a running back that they pick up out of Cincinnati.
Yeah, Rex Burkhead.
Burkhead that just goes off. And so every week with the Patriots, it's somebody new. The same thing, like you say, is now possible in Philadelphia because, you know, they've done a great job of talent acquisition. I mean, it's how do you go out and get a Jay Ajayi for what they paid for him?
Howie Roseman's done a good job once he got Chip Kelly out of there, and he could make the decisions.
You just got to look at it and say, okay, but let's that's the truth. I mean, and you go out and you get, you get Alshon Jeffrey in free agency, and Nelson Aguilar starting to learn how to play the game, and you know, you got three tight ends. I mean, when you got Brent Celek as your backup tight end, that's a pretty good situation.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, Ertz is. He may not be Gronkowski, but he's in the top quarter of the tight ends in the National Football League. And then you go over on the other side, and you know, shoots. I mean, they can get after your tail when you you know, they're so good at playing from ahead.
Carson Wentz leads the NFL with 28 touchdown passes. Tom Brady has 26 touchdown passes, just 3 interceptions. When you start with the MVP chatter, Jeff, you kind of start with those two.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you give the edge in that discussion at the moment, bearing in mind that there is still a lot of the regular season to play out, of course?
You know, I tell you what, I think emotionally you say Carson Wentz because he's the young gunslinger, it's the new guy, new sheriff in town, the whole deal. But if you think about just in terms of what those words are, most valuable player, right? Well, you look at the supporting cast that Brady has, and you look at the supporting cast that Carson Wentz has, you got to say Carson Wentz has better overall football team around him. I mean, the Patriots got some weapons on offense, but they struggled so much early defensively. And Tom had to basically carry him.
Brady's had that for his entire career, Jeff. I mean, we could make – that's how I always fall on the Tom Brady side, when you had that – perennial Brady versus Peyton Manning argument. I thought that Peyton Manning was able to work with more. Tom Brady did it with
less
and a rotating cast of people, but the one constant was always kind of Tom Brady there.
Yeah, and you know, it's really true when you look at it and you say they've gotten him back now, but you lose Martellus Bennett in the offseason, you lose LeGarrette Blount in the offseason. I mean, those are two huge losses.
Yeah.
But what they've done is, you know, it's about asking players to do what they can do. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about the Patriots to me right now is you got to go back to Randy Moss to find a vertical threat like Brandon Cooks has become for
them. That's a different thing. I think we see Tom Brady going bombs away much more.
That was never, because if you charted Tom Brady, you know, all defensive coaches have what we call a hit chart, and basically it's the field and then where the balls are thrown and where they're completed. So if the ball's thrown and it's incomplete, it's a red dot.
Yeah.
If it's complete, it's a green dot. Well, when you would look at Brady's, you know, there would be maybe five or six balls over 15 yards in a game. Now you're starting to see him stretch the field, which is only going to make it easier. I mean, here's a team that lost Julian Edelman, right? Their guy. And, you know, they don't miss a beat. I mean, they just find a way, man.
Find a way. That's what I'm saying. We're seeing something.
It's unique. It really is. And,
yeah, we're seeing,
and you
history.
Know what? You think about it, when it almost defies what the NFL wants structurally.
Yeah.
You know, because of the salary cap, because of the way you draft, because of the way the schedules are done, everything makes it hard for you to have, quote, a dynasty. Mm. And this is a legitimate dynasty.
Let's look at some of the other teams who might face the Patriots in the Super Bowl then. The Minnesota Vikings are 9-2, second in the NFC. And then you've got three teams at 8-3, the Rams, the Saints, and the Panthers. I keep looking at this NFC playoff picture, Jeff. It's crowded because you've got Seattle down there at 7-4, currently the number 7 seed. The Lions are number 8 at 6-5. I think the Packers, we can probably say sayonara to.
Although, did you see 12? 12 was warm, and he looked pretty good on the sideline.
Well, they better get him back this week and then hope they can run the table then just to get to 10-6. But the Falcons are not too bad there because they've already got the tiebreaker over the Seahawks, the Lions, the Packers, and the Cowboys. So all those teams around them, the head-to-head. Let's start as we have a look at some of those teams, Jeff, with the Vikings and we always talk about their defense, but I see an offense that can run the football, can throw to Adam Thielen, can throw to Kyle Rudolph. I mean, complete team, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's, again, one of those teams that you look at, and we talk in the business about situational football is one thing you talk about. Mm. The other thing you talk about is what we call complementary football. And what complementary football is how your offense and defense play to complement one another,
yep,
and your special teams complements one another. You know, the whole thing. It's playing great team football. Mm. And Mike Zimmer has his football team doing that right now. They play great defense. They have the ability to both throw and run it. And they're solid in the kicking game. So Minnesota is a team that I think is playing at a really high level right now. If you look at them, just go across the roster, right? I'm going to say the Eagles have a better roster than the Vikings do. But to me, the critical thing is going to be, just like in the AFC, where are they playing once the playoffs come?
Oh, not necessarily a drastically different team, but certainly a challenge for any team that has to go into US Bank Stadium. So I'm not saying that the Vikings can't win on the road, but
no, but you're right. You're exactly right. No, the noise in that place.
They built that stadium with the material. They were telling me this when I went and toured around there in the summer. So inside that stadium, everything that's inside that stadium is sound reflective. So it's all basically no sound escapes. So the crowd makes a noise, and it all comes in and back down on the field.
You know what's fascinating? I was talking to Kyle Rudolph and asked him, you know, how do you feel? There's never been a Super Bowl team in their home stadium, right? And I said, how's Mike handled that? He said, we addressed it in training camp. Mm. We talk about it.
It's
a reality.
They
want
to do it. They're
on a mission.
I asked all of them that question. I went to Vikings training camp, and I was like, Super Bowl's in your own stadium? They were like, we're not going to shy away from it. We want to make history. We want to be there. You know, and again, that's that bold talk, but you don't want to be.
That's Mike Zimmer.
You don't want to be saying, actually, well, you know what? We're hoping for wild card.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll take divisional round. Yay.
But, you know, and hey, can it happen? Absolutely. Because, you know, again, you look at that roster.
Yeah.
Right? And particularly on defense.
Yep.
I mean, when they're healthy in the back end on defense, they are a nasty bunch.
I'm going to go full on anorak here, Jeff. Do you know there were a couple of times where teams were very close to playing in? So the closest geographically, the Rams, when they lost to the Steelers in 79, something like that, was in the Rose Bowl, but they didn't play in the Rose Bowl.
49ers had to
and
be.
Then the 49ers say, Super yeah. Bowl 19 was at Stanford, right?
Yeah.
So it was at Stanford, which is near San Francisco, but obviously no team has ever been in their own stadium.
It's actually, it's full on like, anorak. That's big time right there.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I like that.
It's not what in was these
it?
Notes.
Was it? It was the Cincinnati-San Francisco game. The Joe Montana touchdown drive was in Stanford Stadium, wasn't it?
No, the Stanford one, you know full well, is when they beat my Miami Dolphins to an absolute pulp, and you know that. So I'm glad you're getting attacked by your microphone now. What about the Rams and the Saints? So we saw them play each other. I felt like when I watched the Saints lose that game, that I mean, I thought it was a very good game. You know, I thought it was well played from both teams. I came away thinking that we're going to see both these teams in the playoffs. I didn't have too many alarm bells for the Saints, but I was very impressed with the Rams. What were your thoughts on that game? The Rams won 26-20.
You know what? You don't have to go any deeper than watch Sean McVay's message to his team after the game. Mm. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
He is so jacked up.
Yeah.
And obviously that was a huge, huge game for them. And he understood. He's really smart cat, man. Mm-hmm. He understood that after they went up to Minnesota and got punched in the face, and Minnesota punched them in the face. They scored the first drive and then couldn't do anything after that. They needed to rebound.
Yeah.
And they come out, score again the first drive of the game, which is like five or six times in a row they've done that. Then they kick a field goal. They're up 10-0. And then they kind of struggle a little bit. And come back at the end and really put some drives together. So it was exactly what you would want for your football team. Respond after adversity. You know, make the plays that you need to make. The defense plays well. The offense plays well. Your kicking game was, I thought, early in the game particularly, a huge edge. Like that first kickoff return. You got to understand how tough that is now for your defense. You get ripped on a kickoff return, and now you're up at midfield, and the whole thing changes now for you defensively.
I'll tell you what will be fascinating for people to go and have a look online. Find a sound effects piece of Jared Goff mic'd up against Houston a couple of weeks back. And, Jeff, what they're doing, the Rams, and I read a fascinating article on Monday about this, and we should look out for this the rest of the season. The Rams are hurrying to the line of scrimmage because they're getting into formation. They're seeing what the defense does. And as long as they're at the line of scrimmage in time, the microphone in Jared Goff's helmet and the earpiece doesn't cut off till, 15 seconds before the end of the... So after 50,
play clock.
The final 15 seconds, the quarterback's on his own. At the moment, they're getting to the line of scrimmage early. And then Sean McVay is... It's like Sean McVay's playing quarterback.
All right.
He's audible in... Is that normal or is that
I'm gonna tell
fascinating?
You something. It's fascinating on two fronts. Number one, that's what coaches have been doing in college and even in high school in Texas for probably 15 years. Mm. It's radical in that it's never been done in the NFL. Because if you watch a college game, a lot of
but
times.
But it's beautiful in its simplicity. Yeah, it makes sense.
It does. And I'll take you back to Team Europe. We did it back then.
Right.
But if you watch a college game or a high-level high school game, you'll see sometimes the coach has a whistle. Sometimes there's some signal for everybody on offense will turn and look at the coach, and he'll get them into the play based upon what the structure of the defense is. What if I was a Ram person right now, I would be hot because you don't want that out
there.
No,
because you don't.
Right now, if I'm a defensive coordinator, now I'm going to say, okay, we're going to show a front, and then at 15 seconds,
we're going to change it.
We're going to jump into another look, right? You know, and see,
that's a great point.
There's some things about the time clocks that I learned from Matt Sheldon, who had worked at Minnesota and then came to work with me in Montreal. He's now
down
with
the Dolphins.
And that you can, if you really study an offense, they're going to snap the ball at about the same time on the play clocks all the time.
Yeah.
So they actually had, when he was in Minnesota, they had a guy in the booth watch the opponent and chart. And so when you started to draw a bead where you got, okay, they're snapping it on four on the play clocks, then you would know, you tell your defensive players, don't move to your blitz until you see 6 seconds left on the play clock.
Right.
And then you jump into something that they can't check the protection.
Yeah, you know, there's always defensive coaches always learning and catching up.
Well, it's
someone
a battle.
Read
it's,
that, right?
Yeah,
someone
exactly. That's why I'm saying. I mean, as soon as you said it, I said, oh, man, I tell you what, Sean's got to be hot.
Sure,
because
the secret is out.
Yeah, because now, again, exactly what you're saying, you line up in a dummy front and then check into something else. And then when they start moving around.
Yeah. The Falcons were an interesting one, Jeff, for me. They beat the Buccaneers 34-20. I can't work out if they're back and exactly how they should be or if it was the Buccaneers with bad defense. 516 total yards for the Falcons against the Bucs. Julio has 12 for 253 yards and two touchdowns. They're starting to look a little bit more like the Falcons, but you got to worry about the level of the defense that they were facing.
Well,
they've won three straight.
It's really interesting with this team because, you know, Peter King, who we have on as a guest, was talking about the Falcons, and he made a comment, and I thought to myself, but you know, Pete, the reality of it is they were 6-4 at this time last year.
Yeah, they were.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much different. But here's what happens is the expectation changes so much, so drastically.
Yeah,
right?
You're the reigning champs.
You go to the Super Bowl, and you basically have the game won if you don't screw it up. Mm. And everybody anticipates you're just going to come out and 500 yards a game, and you're just going to roll through people. It doesn't work that way.
No.
It doesn't work that way. And I think this team is starting to find its footing a little bit. And, you know, Julio's healthier.
That
makes
man,
oh, man,
oh,
is he
goodness.
Special.
He, really
he and AB, did they not put on a show?
It's like
when
you feel like it's Julio Jones who's the best, then Antonio Brown's like, oh, you go for 10 for 169 and two touchdowns on Sunday Night Football then. I mean, that's what's fascinating about the receiver position or about any position in the NFL. You can have all shapes and sizes because there are two very different body types.
Yeah.
And they're the two best receivers in football.
Yeah, you know, and let's talk about that a little bit too, because you look at those, you contrast those two guys. And Antonio Brown was a, you know, he wasn't a high pick. He wasn't a low pick, but he wasn't a high pick.
Well, he came
coming
in
out of Central Michigan.
He very much
he was
a
return guy.
Man. Yeah. That was what he was.
And then you look at Julio, who, you know, basically since he stepped out of the womb has been a special guy.
Yeah.
Been a special guy. I mean, all through his high school, college career, he was always way, way, way better than everybody else. And then you go to Minnesota and there's Adam Thielen, who plays at Minnesota State and doesn't get drafted, is a free agent guy, and really a political free agent guy because he's from a local town.
So I'll tell you a story. 2013, the Vikings, when they first play over here in London, I go out to Vikings training camp, and they bring out all the different guys for me to interview, and they bring over this skinny-looking white guy comes over, and I'm like, I kind of pride myself on knowing my NFL players, and I do not know this guy. The PR guy pulls me to one side. He's like, you do me a favor. Can you talk to this kid? Because he's a good story for us, because he's a local kid. Grew up a Vikings fan, grew up in, I think, a couple of hours north of Minnesota, but watching the Vikings. Randy Moss was his idol. He was like, can you interview this guy? And, you know, we think he'll make the team on special teams. So I'm like, okay, what am I going to talk to him about? So we did a kind of life as a special teamer and as an undrafted free agent, purely talking about what it's like to be on the bottom of a roster. Here he is now.
See, you got to just take it. You broke him. You broke the story.
You scooped everybody
on this.
I predicted.
Somehow you looked out there and you said, hey, get me that Thielen guy. I like him. Bring him over.
I didn't do that. I wish I'd done that.
But you know what?
I once wrote some training camp notes from New England. This is my little thing. I pat myself on the back every now and then. I wrote five observations from a Patriots training camp. Said, look out for this rookie from Kent State who was a quarterback.
You're killing me when you do this now.
And it was Julian Edelman.
Yeah, you're killing me because I rejected him as a college player.
He's on the all Jeff rejection team, isn't he? Who else is on it? Jay's in at running back. Jay Ajayi at running back.
Yeah.
Julian Edelman.
You know, there have been a few that we've missed. You know what? And think about this now. Again, take a Cole Beasley. I'm going to tell you something. Cole had a great college career, but he wasn't a combine. He didn't go to the combine. He got an opportunity because he's a local kid. He's a high school coach's kid from Little Elm, which is outside of Dallas. Every team has the ability to bring in a certain number of guys from their local area.
Right.
That's how he got his opportunity. And it's not about where you're drafted. It's about how you perform. And so you can be Julio Jones and come out of you know, college as the guy, or you can be an Adam Thielen or a Cole Beasley or a Julian Edelman that everybody goes, who?
I guess you get less chances if you're an undrafted.
You know what?
Guy.
There's a saying in the business that if you're drafted high, you got to prove that you can't, and if you're a free agent, you got to prove that you can. And there's a real big difference in those two things.
One last thing before we move on to make our picks in Week 13. I'm still waiting for Hugh Jackson to prove that he can as a coach of the Cleveland Browns. So he's got this. They're 0-11 now. 1-26 he is since he took charge in Cleveland. I want to ask you one thing that I saw on Red Zone. You know where I'm going, right?
Because
your job as coaches is to manage people and to manage the players on your team.
Right.
What message does it send to DeShone Kizer, the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, when before the game, and it's all captured there on TV cameras, not only does Hugh Jackson run up and hug A.J. McCarron, the quarterback of the Cincinnati Bengals, who he tried to trade for and just couldn't file the paperwork in time. They're swaying back and forth like they're long-lost friends and buddies. Then Hugh puts an arm around him and overcomes Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns. He hugs A.J. McCarron, and I looked at that, and I just thought, if I'm DeShone Kizer, I don't like that scene that's playing out right before I'm about to play for Hugh Jackson and Jimmy Haslam. It was bizarre.
It was, and I'll tell you that there is a tremendous amount of respect between players in the National Football League and a lot of times between coaches and players. Mm. Hugh had McCarron in Cincinnati.
There with him,
you know, so I get it. The thing that I think where it's unfortunate is when it's caught on tape like it was.
Can't you meet him down the tunnel?
Exactly. There's a discreet way to do it. You can do it after the game.
Right.
You can do it. So it wasn't a great choice by Hugh. And Mr. Haslam, you know, there's a thing called tampering in the NFL.
Yeah, that might qualify for it.
And I'm dead serious about that. Yeah. If I was, you know, Mr. Brown in Cincinnati. I'm gonna at least address it because that's not. I mean, any guy that's a potential free agent, you know. I mean, and there's ways that you can let them know that you're interested in them, but to single them out and walk across the field and all that stuff, and especially with the history. If it had been a different guy, maybe not. But when it's the guy that you actually physically traded for. And then screwed up the paperwork, and now I mean, it's just a bad look, especially when you're 0-11.
Yeah, it wasn't good. Well, that's the thing; everything is intensified and magnified, and you end up getting crucified when you're 0-11.
Absolutely, and I'm gonna tell you something. It's amazing to me now. This is
1-26 since he took over 26. In Cleveland.
They've
got to blow it all up, Jeff. It hasn't worked, has it? The whole kind of Paul D. Podesta, the money pool, the new way.
The thing about it is. When you look at it and you'd say, if there was at least some part of the team that was playing well, you'd say, yeah, we just missed on our quarterback or, you know, we need a coaching change or whatever. But when you watch them play.
Jeff, there are, I'm not going to name teams or names, but, you know, I get to be around Peter King, of course, who's very well connected. And then I'm around various teams and players. I think that some teams took offense to the fact that the Browns came in and said, we're going to recreate how you do this.
Whoa. Yeah, you're exactly
just
right.
Just like, well, hang on a
you
minute.
You are
how
exactly
about what we've
right.
been doing for decades?
You're exactly right. And actually, I heard Sashi was in a line of people at an airport.
Mm.
And it was at the Combine. And he was, you know, he wasn't a household name.
Right.
I mean, you know, there were a lot of execs in the NFL.
He was in the legal department.
Didn't even know who he was.
He was in the legal department, wasn't
so
he? He said that at the time on Sky. I remember sitting there when he was named the head general manager.
It's like, what?
Like, he's the lawyer for the Jacks.
Yeah, because you had known him from being down there. Well, he's standing in line, and he overhears some other executives in the league just castigating the approach that they're going to take. Mm. And he came out and said, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, and I mean, geez, Al, every time, and I know it's got to be tough to be a Browns fan, but every time you look at that, and frankly, I see very little in DeShone Kizer that makes me believe he's got a chance to be a really good quarterback.
And fans, and this is what, ultimately, the pressure that gets put on coaches comes from fans putting pressure on owners, and owners put pressure up because they want people to be in and watching the games, and it's a business, and they want people to be there. Fans have a very clear-cut view of things, and that fans will still, and I've said this before, and we'll talk about it for the rest of their careers, fans will look at every Carson Wentz touchdown and every, and every Deshaun Watson touchdown say, we could have had those guys. And the very common argument back there, Jeff, and it's made a lot, is Carson Wentz wouldn't have been the same player in Cleveland. But I think the value of the quarterback position is so important that it would have made a difference. Look at what Green Bay have done without Aaron Rodgers. Look at what Deshaun Watson did for the Texans without an offensive line and not much defense. Right. It would have made a difference.
Yeah, shoot. I mean, take Russell Wilson out of Seattle, and what do you got? You got a 4-win football team.
Right. So it's,
you know, I mean, that's just the importance of the position. And when you've missed that many times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you missed once.
No, you could throw Dak Prescott in there.
I mean, they missed repeatedly on guys that certainly would have been an improvement over what they got. And who's to say that if they had one of those guys that we weren't talking about a 6 or 8 win team right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's make our picks for Week 13 then, Jeff. Starting on Thursday night, Washington at Dallas. Dallas are in 3-4. I'm going Washington. What do you reckon?
I'm going to take the Redskins because they got a lot to play for. Yeah. Cowboys do too, but I did not like at all what I saw out of Dallas last week.
No, me either. I'm just glad that Jason Garrett is very well liked by Jerry Jones, and he's got some history with that organization. His dad was a scout. Jason was a quarterback there just as well, because otherwise I think hot seat.
There was a time, actually, where all three of the Garrett brothers and the dad worked together. I mean, John and Judd and you know that, but their problems are pretty deep. You know, you look at defensively, Neil. They just did not play at all well in that game, and you know they're kind of a one trick pony. If they don't get ahead of you, it's hard for them. And you know, same offensively, they're not blocking anybody now.
No, they're not. Let's move on to Sunday then. Minnesota, Atlanta, classic defense against offense battle here. It's in Atlanta. I always, when I don't know who I'm going to pick, I let you go first.
Well, I'm a little concerned about I haven't seen the injury reports. Freeman going to be back?
I do not know.
Because he was in concussion protocol last week.
I might know this. I might know this when it comes to I don't know, actually. I don't know.
You're competitive. I like it.
I don't know. I'll tell you what, I'm going to go Minnesota.
Yeah, you know what? I'm leaning towards Minnesota, especially if Freeman's hurt.
Yeah, all right, both go Minnesota in that one. Detroit at Baltimore.
Wow. You know, I was ready to give Baltimore up for the dead.
Yeah, me
you know,
too,
early in the season after the way they played here in Wembley. But, you know, Detroit, they frustrate me. I mean, golly, come on now. Run the ball a little bit.
Darius Slay said after the game against Minnesota, he kind of questioned their urgency and their intensity. So, you know, there's some things to watch there.
That's not good, especially when it's one of your key players.
Yeah, I'm going Baltimore.
Makes a statement like that. It's in Baltimore?
It's in Baltimore.
I'll take Baltimore.
All right, both going Baltimore in that one. New England at Buffalo. I just think the Patriots keep rolling. I'm going New England.
Yep.
Both going Patriots. San Francisco at Chicago. Could see Jimmy Garoppolo.
Jimmy G.
Yeah.
Jimmy
forced
G.
Forced into action with C.J. Beathard getting hurt. This is a good one, though, because it's just like a sort of playing a preseason game or playing a lower level college team, isn't it? Playing the Bears at the moment.
I think right now for both these teams, it's an important game.
Yeah.
You know, and particularly for the 49ers. You know, they show flashes.
Yeah.
Even in the early in the Seattle game, there were signs that you can see it's there, it's coming. But, you know, again, hopefully Jimmy G can be the guy that puts them over the edge. I'm going to take the Niners.
I'm going to take the 49ers as well. Tampa Bay at Green Bay.
Ugh, bad game, bad ball.
It's a bad game.
Ugh, Tampa is such a disappointment.
This reminds me of when I was first a fan of the NFL in the 80s, because both these teams were awful back then.
Yeah, and you know what? Tampa may have maybe one of the big, along with the Giants, one of the big disappointments of this football season. You know,
I'm going to go
Green
Bay. There's
some sparks. Yeah, I agree with you. I saw some sparks out of Green Bay.
All right, both going Packers. Indianapolis at Jacksonville.
Jacksonville. What
poor old
in
Chuck
the
Pagano.
World was Chuck talking about the other day?
Somebody go on, go online and look at the Chuck Pagano press conference. He starts referencing Groundhog Day. He starts talking about
the weather?
Hurricanes coming in from the coast of Florida, northeasters or nor'easters. Oh, my goodness. No, he's just such a nice guy, Jeff. I really like him, but I feel like he's... When he started talking about storm clouds gathering, I thought he was talking about
for him. That's exactly where I thought he was going. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it's just like...
He was just talking about the weather.
Like a meteorology class in college.
Very, very bizarre. I think he might be on his way out, sadly. Denver at Miami. Ooh. I'm going to pick the Dolphins. They're going to win. Yes, come
boy,
on. I'm back on the bandwagon for a week.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
I guarantee... No, I won't.
Oh.
No.
Double or nothing?
No. You definitely don't want to see me walking around Leicester Square in nothing, Jeff. No one wants to see that.
Come on!
I'm going Miami.
Yeah, I got to take Miami. Although, you know, there's another team that is just frustrating the heck out of me. Because, you know, you look at them again, what, they scored 17 points last week?
Yeah.
And one of those was a defensive touchdown, which means that you scored one touchdown again.
And I was listening to some of that the radio talk. It was actually from New England afterwards. They said that Miami spent more time trying to punch people in the face and grab face masks than actually try and cover people downfield.
You saw
trying to be tough guys, but you
saw that. I saw Ndamukong Suh got a face mask, blatant face mask call, and you know they're frustrated, obviously. And I'm gonna tell you something, Neil. I really think that they're a better football team than that record. And certainly they got the quarterback issue, but gosh.
I'm not going to criticize Ndamukong Suh because for one reason or another, I end up kind of running into him quite a lot. So it's not like I'm normally, you know, quite critical of players I'm never going to see. But
you know what?
I don't want to cross the path of that, man.
Here's the thing that's with Suh. When I saw him in training camp, they were doing some things with him that really I thought were good because they were getting into some looks where – you know, where he couldn't get help to him, to whoever who was blocking him. And I'm going to tell you something. When he's one-on-one with just about anybody in the league.
Oh, yeah, if he wants it.
He's unblockable. But I don't see those looks during the season. And I don't know where they went to. But, you know, again, if you're just rushing four, he's going to get pinched every time.
All right. We're both going Miami in that one. Carolina at New Orleans. Cam Newton is back to being Cam the adventurous and Cam the dangerous, but I wasn't that impressed with the. They had to really dig deep to beat the Jets. I just think the Saints have got a better team, Jeff. I'm going to go Saints at home.
Yeah, and again, Olsen played.
Yeah, and he was out again. He's having X-rays this week.
Yeah, he's apparently hurt that foot again. Yeah. I don't think it's bad, but it's going to probably cost him this week at least. They probably brought him back a little bit too early.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Neil. I think that you know there are certainly some things in Carolina's game that are going to have to improve if they're going to be a playoff team.
Okay, next up, we got the Kansas City Chiefs at the New York Jets. Andy Reid has said he's sticking with Alex Smith. He's still our guy for now. You think?
Were you surprised?
No. I think the speculation about Patrick Mahomes, it feels like the right time to have that. It feels like it's a good story for the media to cover. And I wanted to ask back to you, but I feel like Alex Smith still offers them the best chance to win this division. Do you see that, or do you feel like they need a spark because they're not as aggressive or as adventurous as they were? And even the touchdown they had looked like an old Chiefs touchdown, a wide receiver screen.
Who's leading the division?
Yeah, the Chiefs, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised when Rob said last week, I'd go with Mahomes right now. Because in my opinion, you're still leading the division. If you were third in the division right now, then I'd say, hey, maybe you got to need
because
that.
Doesn't some of the offense change, or you got to really?
Yeah, I mean,
you really
a lot
gotta
of it's
know,
gotta
you
change.
Really got to know that Mahomes has got everything buttoned down. Because if you're coming with a simplified offense at this time of year,
exactly.
So I think it's a story worth watching. I think it could happen still, but I don't think it should happen.
I don't think they're ready for that kind of a drastic change. You're talking, guys, about a rookie.
Yeah,
a the you know what I mean when. Training camp is not the season.
No.
Training camp games are training camp games. This is now when it really matters. And having a rookie out there at this time is that's a course of last resort.
Yeah. This is a tough game at the Jets. Who are you picking, Jeff?
I'm going to take Kansas City, but yeah, I think Todd Bowles has done a phenomenal job with that roster he has.
All right, let's get through a couple of others. I want to get a couple of questions in the mailbag. Houston at Tennessee. I say Tennessee.
Tennessee.
All right, both going Tennessee to keep that going. Cleveland at the Chargers. So
Chargers.
Not going to lose to Cleveland, are they? The Rams at Arizona. I still like the Rams. I mean, it was a great win for Arizona last week against the Jags. 57-yard field goal with 1 second left from Phil Dawson. What a way to win it.
He never kicked one that long ever.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow. I'm going Rams. What about you?
I'm going to take the Rams.
All right. Both going Rams for that one. The Giants at the Raiders. Oof.
The Raiders.
Bad ball as well there. Both going Oakland.
Bad ball. Come on, man.
Philadelphia at Seattle. So now we're going to see a little.
We're going to find a little bit more about Seattle. Yeah.
And Seattle.
To me, I like Philadelphia. Philadelphia ain't got
to.
Philadelphia ain't got to convince me a lick. Yeah. What I want to see now is Cam Chancellor's gone.
Yeah.
You know, there's some issues. Mm. And now Russell has got to do it against a really good team.
I'm going Philadelphia.
I like Philly, too.
Wow, we've picked every single game the same this week.
We're not done.
One more to go. Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. I think we are going to do.
You're taking Cincinnati?
No. I'm going Pittsburgh. What about you?
I like the Steelers.
All right, so we have gone. That's good because that means you can't catch me up. Let's just get a couple of questions from the mailbag to finish us off on Inside the Huddle this week. So this one comes from Colin, who says, can the Jags bounce back or will they just play off pretenders?
No, I mean, you know, they're a football team that had to go to Arizona. It's an east to west trip. That's a hard trip to make. Arizona's a good football team. They got players. And, you know, they did not play well. They're going to have games like that. They're not a super football team. They're a good football team that I think will be a playoff team.
They're a good football team with a good running game.
Yeah, when good, that goes
very
good.
Very good defense. Yeah. But I worry at some point, and there's a classic example at the end of that game, they don't get it done in the passing game. Blake Bortles, I think, is on that kind of Alex Smith hot seat. Probably more.
Yeah,
more
the
so.
One,
I think he's running out of time.
I tell you, the one that just was really shocking to me was the one he threw to Tyrann Mathieu on the little rollout play. It looked like he hit him right in the chest with it, like you never saw him. Mm. You know, and that's when you may have those kind of bad turnovers, it's not good.
This one comes from Luke Hazelwood. It says, I wonder if you and Jeff could shed some light on the rules on touchdown celebrations, especially since the Eagles' crazy ones from Sunday. Well, Luke, they basically took the shackles off this year, the NFL. They allowed the players to do group celebrations again. Oh, Jeff, I'm a grumpy old man, I know, but it's all going a little bit.
Yeah, I think.
You know, they were line dancing in Philadelphia. Yeah. There were like 15 of them line dancing.
With that stuff, you got to be really, really cautious because you got to understand, too, there's another team on the other side that has some pride in their pros. And, you know, when you're doing that, watch out because I think that can lead to more of the kind of stuff that we saw out of the Raiders and Denver. Mm. And, you know, basically what the rules are now, no obscene gestures, no guns, no, throat slash, you know, none of that kind of stuff. But other than that, have at it. And, you know, again, you'd think these guys, you know, would be working on their game plan, not on, you know, what dance step or the electric slide or whatever. Although I got to tell you, it was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Last one, Jeff. I like to touch on a little bit of history every now and then, as you know. So this one comes from Graham Potts, who says, can you discuss Sean Taylor's legacy? So this week was 10 years since Sean Taylor was killed. Many fans won't know who Sean Taylor was. They will look at his career and see, what, 4 years in the NFL? Maybe 3 or 4 years? Maybe 5, I think. But you talk to players around the NFL. This was going to be an all-time great player, right? Sean Taylor of the Washington Redskins.
His trajectory in his career, and it was young, I mean, was that path. And was one of those really rare guys that could do everything from the safety position. I mean, he could cover. He was a vicious hitter. Yeah. I mean, a vicious hitter.
I did a Pro Bowl game. We did the Pro Bowl on Sky Sports. And yeah, Brian Moorman, fake punt.
And he about killed him.
In the Pro Bowl. He must have knocked him 6 yards out of bounds.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? Yeah. They don't hit in the Pro Bowl.
But and he had, you know, you look around the league, historically in the league, and there have been some great hitters at that position. Mm. I mean, you Doug Plank, Jack Tatum, Ronnie Lott. Yeah. I mean, there have been some Kenny Easley.
Steve Atwater.
There have been some of those kinds of guys. Mm. But he had more than that. He had the ability to go down and play man-to-man. He was great in the box. And by all accounts, was a tremendously, tremendously popular guy with his teammates.
Yeah. Sad loss of Sean Taylor, but good that we can remember him and have a chance for people to go away and
it is it, look at go his game. Go back and get on YouTube and look at the game. He's a special guy. Tragic.
All right, we are out of time on Inside the Huddle, brought to you with NFL Europe Shop and DraftKings.co.uk. It's been a lot of fun. We've dressed up a little studio. We've got little
nice
video clips.
Here.
We've got everything going on this week. So until next time, Coach, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.